This episode of the Fair Game Podcast is brought to you by the Fair Game Golf app. It's like having a clubhouse and a scorecard on your phone. Connect with golfers across the globe, find people to play with, and track your rounds all in one place. If you want to show off that new putter or flex that you're about to play a top 100 course, you can do that too. It's like any other social media app, but just for golf. Best of all, it's 100% free. Head to the Apple or Google Play stores and check it out. Fair Game, the app for golfers. Welcome to the Fair Game Podcast. We are coming at you guys live from the stock room at Five Iron Golf. We needed a quiet place to record, and this room is actually quite nice. I'm sitting between apple cider vinegar on my left and some styrofoam cups and markers on my right. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
I mean, I'm not doing so bad. We're really seeing how the sausage is made, aren't we?
Is there any sausage in here, by the way? Like, there's garlic powder. I see garlic powder.
I don't know, but I'm definitely eyeing this peanut butter right next to me.
I've already thought to myself, I'm taking a dozen of those on my way out here.
Those are good. The portable peanut butters. I feel like peanut butter as a golf snack doesn't get enough love.
Just 100%. And then you add a banana with that.
Yes.
Holy smokes.
Peanut butter. So I just completed this book club that I was in.
Yeah.
And the host of the book club is in Surrey. He's in England.
Mm-hmm.
And my last class, I was eating apple and peanut butter. And the first thing he said to me, what is with Americans and peanut butter? And I was like, do you want to fight? Are you coming for me? He came for me. But you know what? I stood my ground.
Is that not a thing over there? Do they not like peanut butter in general or what?
I think it's just the ferocity of which Americans defend their peanut butter. I don't think it's about consumption as much as it is loyalty. You know what I'm saying?
Interesting.
Like, we stand for something and it's peanut butter.
Yeah. I mean, it is good. I mean, it's a great high protein, healthy fats. It's got all the good stuff.
I have a magnet in my fridge that says peanut butter is the glue of life.
It is.
Truly.
How do you guys feel about almond butter?
I swear to fucking God, get out. We don't think. I don't feel about almond butter. I don't think about it. I don't feel it.
I go through phases.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So peanut, almond, what else? Cashew?
Cashew.
Really?
Cashew butter.
Even sunflower butter too.
Sunflower butter pops.
I can't with the sunflower butter. So like I have a 4-year-old and you can't take the whole like nut in school thing. Right. So they give them sunflower butter, whatever the fuck, sandwiches. Mm-hmm. And it's not a nut, which I understand, but it smells like shit. And I don't, it drives me fucking crazy. And he's like, Papa, I kind of like it. And I was like, you're crazy, dude. This is not.
He asked to keep it at home, and Andrew's like,
absolutely
pack
not.
Your shit.
Right.
We are an like, get out. Sunflower butter
it's just not,
family.
It's not good. I would rather have just jelly than have sunflower butter. It's not good.
Wow.
How do you feel just about like sunflower seeds?
I like them.
Yeah, that's like a, what's the word I'm looking for? That's like a ritual.
Sure. But you can't like take things and mash them up and say, this is butter now. Like I can't take this bag of pretzels to my left and say, oh, this is pretzel butter.
Well, there's not enough fat in it. I bet you if you put some olives, you could make some olive butter.
Wow.
I mean, that's just tamponade.
Yeah, that's fair. And it's just tamponade. Anyway, we've been talking about condiments for a long time.
Yeah.
Let's get into the meat of it. So Liz has been on the podcast before. Some of you guys might know her, aka Shank Haney, but I wanted to take a quick second just to give them a quick little refresher. Who are you? Liz Breed.
I don't know.
Are you?
I don't fucking know. I get asked this question all the time, and I'm like, I'm me. I'm a golf instructor in New York City.
Yeah.
I've been at the game for my whole life.
Awesome.
Can't stress that enough. I started teaching like 5 years ago. Do I have a life outside of golf? Sure, I guess. But apart from who I am, that's pretty much it. It's really just golf.
Awesome. That's good. I mean, that was good in a little tele intro.
That's not bad.
It's clear.
I got to work on it.
That was pretty good.
Yeah.
It's okay.
It's like the elevator speech.
Keep going.
I like the elevator pitch. So, Ellen,
yes.
Give us, some people might not know you.
Yeah.
So give us the whole spiel.
Of course. So if you look at my Fair Game profile, yes, I do have a profile, but I have yet to play around to Fair Game.
That was the strongest Fair Game flex on this podcast I've ever experienced.
It's like Mariah Carey. I don't know her.
Love it.
I don't know her.
Who is that? But anyway, patient listener of golf stories who likes to hit bombs.
Outstanding.
Right?
Honestly, so, yeah, she beats the piss out of the ball.
Oh, hello. Okay.
Yeah, I hit it pretty far, which is great. It's fun.
Are you from the Northeast?
I am from the Northeast. I'm from Scranton, Pennsylvania. Yes, The Office. Have not seen one episode of The Office, so might have a lot of haters on this podcast, but that's actually one of my New Year's resolutions. You know, I'm gonna watch The Office. I'm going to sit down in the beat of this winter, because I'm not in Florida anymore, and watch The Office.
Okay, a couple things about The Office, because we're going on tangents here. This is very funny.
Gorgeous.
It's a great show, right?
I know.
The American version is very funny, from my perspective. I would recommend, this is going to be very weird, I would recommend starting with the British version.
Speak on it.
Interesting.
For me, the British version of The Office is the truest version of The Office.
Yes.
Because it is the cringiest office culture. It's a little bit darker and a little bit colder and not as like fun and silly because they're British and like their humor is like weird. But it's more, I would argue, it's more accurate of what would happen in a really weird corporate structure.
I love it.
It doesn't feel like a bit. Like the US version is very much like, it almost feels like sketch comedy.
Yes.
Where there's like a start and a finish. But like when you watch the UK version, it's like more,
it's more cringy.
Yes. And it's more like, it's way more, you'd like really soak it in way more.
I like
you
it.
Have to.
It's so weird.
UK it is.
Yes. Start there. Just a couple episodes and then, you know, move over. But awesome. They're both good. They're That's good so in different funny. Ways. But
Do people
good.
Ask you that a lot?
Oh, all the time.
They're like Scranton, Pennsylvania.
I kind of just tee myself up when I have the word Scranton in my mouth and they automatically like, oh, I don't care about Ellen. Have you seen The Office? And I'm just like, I kind of just teed up with myself, which I just did right there.
Do you like slide into, because I feel like with teaching too, I get this way where I have like a pre-programmed script. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Do you get that way with when people bring up Scranton?
Yeah.
You just like go into autopilot.
Yeah. And I'm just a heavy disappointer when I say I haven't watched one episode. Good. And I kind of just end the conversation there because they get so jacked up because they're ready to like basically relate and see if I can relate to it. And I'm just like,
no,
bro.
Good for you.
I'm sorry.
It's fine.
That's tasty.
But it's but you know what? That might change after the UK version.
Well, yeah. We'll see. Look, we'll circle back. We'll dive in and we'll check it out. So, quick pivot. Let's chat a little bit about, some stuff in golf that's happening on the course, and then I will talk about some off-course shit. I know it's that weird time of the year where golf is in a lull, we're waiting for the season to start, everyone's on vacation. Is there anything happening in the game that you guys are, like, interested, intrigued by right now?
Charlie Woods.
Okay.
Jesus Christ. And the word on everybody's brain.
How can you
I
not,
will
though?
Say, I know, like, it is kind of fascinating. Almost every single lesson that I've had since last weekend, someone has brought up Charlie Woods.
Really?
And it's crazy. Yeah, it's so interesting. Like I've always wondered this about like when people like make kids into adults.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
And I feel like that conversation happens a lot with Charlie, but I mean, it seems like he really enjoys it. You know, it seems like he's in the...
Sure.
Like he chooses to be there.
I think that's fair.
You know?
What do you think?
I think it just brings out the nostalgia feeling of when Tiger Woods was on TV, right? The 2000s Tiger.
Reliving the glory days, baby.
I mean, how can you not look at that golf swing? I mean, and just the mannerisms, right? I mean, we can go on and on.
I know, how cute is that? Like, he does everything the same. It's pretty fascinating.
And I think it's just good that Tiger can relive and kind of teach Charlie the ways of Tiger. We as a society haven't really dug into who Tiger Woods really is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's good to see that Charlie loves the game as much as we know.
Yeah.
But also it's like reliving those Tiger feels in those moments.
It is interesting how we're seeing Tiger as like the most human he's ever
been. I love
when
it.
When he's with his son.
It's amazing.
I have to say, I'm really excited. I just got back from Los Angeles, and I had never really spent proper time there. That is what I'm excited about. Los Angeles golf is really cool.
Look, in the winter in New York City, I'm an LA hater. We were talking about this before we started recording.
I love LA.
It's fine, but...
Whatever.
It's fine in January, but it's not the vibe.
I mean, it was 80 degrees.
That's nice. I can't argue with
Shorts.
That. Would you do LA over Florida?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. I would do LA over a lot of things.
Interesting.
I hate Florida. I think that Florida is a necessary evil.
Sure.
In the golf space.
Right.
Like, I used to spend my winters between Tampa and Naples, had some great times. Naples is a bit weird for me. Tampa was really fun, but I would never want to go back.
Mm.
Too many weird, just not even bad golf memories, just weird memories. But I fully enjoyed LA golf. It was really fun to get that like camaraderie and that sense of, you know, it feels like you're part of something really special there. Well, for you sure. are.
Totally.
Yeah.
I think that's fair. I'm going to say one thing about Charlie Woods. And it's not a hater comment. This is just my own.
You're going to hate on a 13-year-old.
No, but here's my thing, right? And maybe I'm thinking this because, like, I'm a dad now. So I have a son. So I'm very mindful of the pressures and the expectations that we put on our children, right?
Right.
Yeah. And I love the fact that Charlie and his dad can share something and do it together. And I also can see, because I see my kid do it too, where he mimics like the things that I do and like, you know, he wears his hat and all this shit. Like it's fucking cute and it's great.
It's so cute.
However, I think for a father and son, I think that's totally cool. But for the entire world of golf, and I think some people are getting a little crazy about this, they're forgetting that he's just a kid. And all that, everything that's happening between that father and that son is completely normal.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. it's not our place to make it seem more like a thing because he already has so much pressure and expectations on his shoulders.
Right.
And I worry about him like as he gets older. And like I think Tiger will set him up to like deal with that. But I mean, look at I don't know, like Michael Jordan's kids. Like it's too much pressure.
Marrying his fucking
Scotty's.
What's his face?
Yeah, isn't he? He's
marrying Scotty's ex-wife.
Yeah,
that's crazy. That's fucking weird.
It's funny. I was talking about that.
It's like intentional. It feels.
Yeah.
Or something.
There's some weird shit going on there for sure.
Very weird shit going on.
I think Scottie Pippen makes popcorn now. By the way, I've been watching these.
Is it called Pipcorn?
No, not Pipcorn, which I've had before, which is great popcorn.
But like, that's an actual popcorn brand?
Yes, there's
one. Wow, look at that.
Right. See, I've been working in CPG for too long.
Am I a marketing genius?
You might be.
Oh my God.
Follow Scottie Pippen on Instagram. He's always pushing like random.
That's got to be such a bad follow.
He's got like, hey, like I was always looking for healthy things to eat. I was literally talking to somebody about this. This is so weird that we're talking this again.
That is very funny.
He was like, I'm looking for healthy snacks on the road and I have this popcorn. I think it's his brand and it's got like, this one is kale flavored and this one is like quinoa. So it's like healthy flavored popcorn.
Wow.
Sell it at Walmart. I don't know. It's just very random.
You know what? If I wanted something that was kale, you know what I would eat? I'd eat fucking kale.
That is true.
Do you know what I will say? Last saying about Charlie Woods.
Yeah.
I had one of my students asked me if I think that he's going to win a major championship.
That's the thing.
I was like, you have to understand that is so weird.
Right.
It's very weird.
That is so weird.
For a child.
For a child.
Mm-hmm.
That's my point.
It is strange.
That's a great point.
Right.
It is a weird fascination.
I mean, listen, we want all the best, but I think at the end of the day, it is a lot of pressure for a kid, without a doubt. And with that perspective, I think teaching people or like letting people know, like, hey, like he's just a kid,
right?
You know, yeah, we hope for the best and we want to see that tigerishness,
totally,
which I want to. But I mean, do it in the right way.
Correct.
And like you said, I hope Tiger trains him and teaches him how to deal with, and I mean, even Sam too, right?
Dude, why does Sam, I like, it's so weird when you like, you've really watched these kids grow up
sure.
in like a very strange way that you don't see a lot, and it's so wild, like
mm-hmm.
they're like adults, or they like, it's just crazy.
Totally. It's a lot.
Yeah,
and we're looking, we are getting a view into the private lives of people, and it's hard. And I think some of that is just the cost of being a celebrity.
Totally.
But at the same time, as regular people, like sometimes you have to be like, look, like that's your shit, dude. Like go do your thing and like let your kids be kids.
Do you know what I will say?
Yeah.
How hard did y'all cry when Annika and her son
Will
did the thing where he was like, he started crying
good.
And oh yeah.
Walk slower, mom.
Walk slower, mom. I was like, okay, you're not even my son and I'll walk slower.
Right.
That was so, that is like such a cool week in golf, isn't it?
Right.
It really is.
But that was definitely an onion cutter. I mean, even compared to that, I mean, think of, because Charlie obviously has peers, and also put yourself into the mind of another 13-year-old boy on that golf team, right? And you see his dad, and then you know who his dad is, and
right.
he's getting all this spotlight or whatever. Another thing, think about it from the perspective of maybe, and just maybe, there's another kid on that team that might be just as good.
I know.
Oh, absolutely.
I know.
That's getting
just no shine. Yeah.
Which, and look, that's the unfortunate reality of it.
That might be an advantage, though.
Exactly.
I think there's something so, like, Ellen and I have known each other since we were actual children.
Wait, that long?
We've known each other forever.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Freshman year?
I can't wait till we get
freshman,
to that
freshman, sophomore year.
Freshman, sophomore year.
And of high school. And, you know, there is such a weird, or at least the way that I was raised in golf, like, they're your friends, they're your enemies, you love them, you want to beat them. It's not even an enemy thing. It's just that you take a lot of pride with beating the people around you.
Totally.
I felt this way in college mm-hmm. too. Like,
yep.
I almost like to beat my teammates more than I like to beat the rest of the field.
Mm.
And I think there's something, especially when you're so young and so malleable by a sport like golf,
yeah, yeah.
like it just is who you are. Like, I hate when people ask what my hobbies are outside of golf, because I'm like, I don't have the time. I don't have anything outside of golf.
Really? Should we skip the next question?
I don't know.
I want to know, like, everybody has a second obsession, even if it's not the same level.
Sure.
Like, what are you into? And then we'll go to Ellen. What are you into other than golf?
Oh my God. Solomon's.
Okay. When did this...
Tech gear.
When did this start?
With Solomon specifically?
Sure.
Sponsor me. I'm almost at 10K.
This episode is sponsored by
this episode is sponsored by my effort. I guess I've always had like a little bit more of a like a gender neutral kind of style.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always kind of gravitated towards like, I don't even want to call it athleisure, because it's not that. It really is that like tech, sure. you know.
Kind
functional. Of, yeah, functional fabrics yeah, yeah. and things like that. So I first started seeing Solomon's probably, well, honestly, when I went to the UK, because they're massive.
They are.
And when I went, so when I was in Scotland in March, I was like, those shoes are hideous. And then I kept seeing them and I was like, those might be the coolest things I've ever seen. Like, I think everybody goes through that journey yes, with Solomon.
It's the fugly effect.
It is fugly. And then you're yes. keep looking at them and you're like, I have to have all of them.
Yes.
And then I couldn't, they're like, they're definitely like, a. I mean, they're $200+. So I was like, shit, I can't really afford them. And then I got my first pair and then I was like.
Wait a second.
I'm obsessed.
Do you play golf in them?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
They're my 8-day a week shoe.
And so you're there like off course, on course, you live in those
I
things.
I mean, look at how crusty.
No, but they look good though.
I mean, right. I would say I do have Solomons when I do hike and they were.
They're red.
They are the best
are
shoe.
Are they comfy?
You hear me?
Very.
Do you want to float?
Interesting.
Do you want to levitate?
I will say, I did look. I mean, I have like Bigfoot problems. They don't make a 14.
You're a 14.
Oh. Yeah, it's not ideal.
Look in their skiing section.
Yeah. 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 Do you guys have any skis?
Hey, excuse me.
Look, they do look dope. And
they
I
originated
do think,
as a ski company.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're like fully outdoor.
You know they make them.
But those in like black and like red and
so
red
good.
Are sick.
They make like the most unhinged colorways.
But that's that UK shit.
They that is make. That UK shit. And so I'm up to two pairs now.
Okay. You're in.
And we're not stopping anytime soon.
I like it. Ellen, what are you into other than golf?
Call me the professional meal prepper. I'm a fiend when it comes to meal prepping.
Wait, what's for lunch today?
We got, talk about sponsorships. If I could be sponsored by Wegmans. Let me tell you, I'm obsessed with Wegmans. It's a cult. I absolutely love it.
It's great.
But today it's going to be... Man, Wegmans lemon garlic pork tenderloin with broccoli and
clean
carrots. Because you know I'm emptying the tank, so I can
sure.
fill up on
you
cookies.
Care about that eyesight. You yeah. care about the what else are carrots good for?
Beta carotene levels.
Beta carotene.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah.
Beta carotene.
Yes. So that's for lunch today. But yeah, when I'm not giving lessons, hitting bombs, I'm meal prepping.
Wait,
so
are you? So when you say Wegmans, you are going to Wegmans specifically for the produce to make said.
I'm going Wegmans probably. I would go to Wegmans every day if I could.
Got it.
But yeah, I mean, specifically for the produce, the meat.
Got it.
Everything.
What is like, how would you describe Wegmans in three words? I've never been inside of a Wegmans. How would you describe
we're
it?
We're not friends anymore.
That's how you would describe it. That's... We're not friends. How would you describe it in three words?
A fantastic food experience.
Wow.
Fantastic food experience. The FFE.
The FFE.
What's your favorite? Because I know they have the reputation of making really good prepared foods there.
Mm-hmm.
What is your favorite prepared? Yeah, that's their whole thing.
How does everybody fucking know the Wegman experience.
They just opened up one in the city.
Yeah, they had this one here and everyone freaked out. I have a friend from Buffalo that like lost her shit when it opened up here. It's fucking wild.
Where is it?
I don't know. I've never been inside.
Ellen? Look, you're a sponsored Wegman's athlete. You don't even know where the one is.
Well, listen, I'm just part of the Manhattan experience here, sure. Right? Country girl from Scranton now works in Manhattan. Like, holy smokes.
It's a great story.
I don't even know which street we're on. Or what park we're on. Park Avenue? We're on Park Avenue.
Yeah, we're
on honestly,
Warren
it doesn't matter. It's
it doesn't
all
matter.
A fucking... Yeah.
But,
okay, so favorite prepared food?
So if I was going to go to Wegmans and not meal prep for myself...
Yes.
I'm going to the hot bar.
Yes.
I'm making my own salad / Asian bowl that there is. What's in there? It all depends on the day.
Right. Mm-hmm. Fascinating.
It really is. The hot bar is like the ultimate, like,
comfort.
Yeah. Like you just slap a bunch of shit in there and you're like, I hope this works out in the end.
Exactly.
And it always does.
It always
does. Absolutely.
I like the hot bar.
Okay.
Interesting. We got Wegmans might be the place to go for lunch.
We're
so let's dig in a little bit more. I'd love to learn more about how you guys met. And then you guys played golf together too?
Bro, we've known each other for over half of our lives.
Wow. So it all started in college? High school?
No, high school.
High school.
High school.
Yeah.
High school.
Wow. Okay. So who said hello to who first?
We didn't say hi to each other.
Not at all. I mean,
there were no hellos. There were no pleasantries.
Let's put it this way. Liz was the most, I wouldn't say cutthroat, but her
savage.
She was a savage. And she let you knew she was a savage and had the best confidence ever.
Stop flirting with me, Ellen. Oh my God.
And I want to say, like, thank God you had to go to your junior prom when we played in the IJGT event in Hershey, because I actually ended up winning that event because you pulled out of the event.
Honestly, I think
because you had to go to your prom.
I think that really tracks. Like, I would even describe myself as that now. Like, if somebody was like, you have to pick between a party and work. Fair or enough. At the time, what was work? I'm picking the fucking party every time.
100%.
That's so funny that, because like, I remember myself as a brat, just like not very nice to be around. And that's basically about it. But no, we weren't, I wouldn't say, it's not like we fucking hated each other, but there's like definitely that competitive energy when you're an awkward kid.
Sure.
But we first played together at a regional event our sophomore year of high school. And we played with two of our other friends that then went on to play college golf at Ole Miss and Purdue. Like our era of Pennsylvania golf was really crazy stacked. Like Aurora Khan, she played college golf at Purdue. She went the year after they won a national championship.
Oh, wow.
Which is amazing.
Our friend Stanny went to Baylor and then Ole Miss. Baylor was really good. Ole Miss has since won a national championship.
Mm-hmm.
I went on to Kentucky. Ellen played at Penn State. We had a couple of other girls that went to like Illinois, and like we were just at a really good time for girls golf in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, especially being in Pennsylvania in the colder months and not having the indoor facilities that we see today.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, we put up the bag in the garage for a few months there,
dogging it.
Like,
oh, that's interesting. This is like pre-sim culture.
This is pre-sim.
I mean, this would have been, we graduated high school in 2010.
Yeah.
So this would have been like 2008.
Interesting. So then what were you doing off season? Just
skiing with Solomons.
It was, yeah. It was basically, we're not hitting a golf ball. It's too fucking cold.
I honestly, it's kind of difficult for me to, I have like specific memories of going to see my swing coach who in Southern Central Pennsylvania was the guy, Ted Sheftick.
Ted
Sheftick. He's like a legend. He actually was one of the first guys to use like biodynamic performance, like the force plates and things like that. That was like Ted's zhuzh.
Interesting.
Then. So I remember like working with him quite a bit, but we've had a very intricate. I mean, we played junior golf together and then we played college golf together and then we played professional golf together. And I think that's it. Yes, it is insanely special, but that's like what everyone does. Like, I think it's important to remember that like anybody that's between the ages of 26 and like 34, we've played with since we were children.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's so like, men and women, you know, on the guy's side and on the women's side. Like,
for sure.
It's so interesting, that relationship, that developmental like junior golf is so developmental. It's crazy. But yeah, we played regional golf together and then we went our separate ways for college and then played on what was then the Symetra Tour together. And then Ellen.
I kind of, I mean, for me professionally, I ended it early. I kind of quit early on just because of my injuries. I was always beat up physically, which looking back, you know, is just the mental anxiety and the fear of the unknown mentally that eventually just said, hey, like, stop doing this. And I injured myself.
Right.
But, you know, it was hard. And I remember I was talking to Liz about this when we played in the Pro-Am at ShopRite this past June, where we really connected and shot the shit a lot, which was awesome. And, you know, I was just telling her of how even today I'm still kind of mentally struggling. Like, who am I, you know, as a golfer?
Mm-hmm.
Because growing up, we were always Liz the golfer, Ellen the golfer, mm-hmm. right? And we didn't know anything, and that was in our identity.
It really is synonymous.
Right.
And it's just so weird.
It's still like eating at me till this day, because when I go out and compete,
mm-hmm.
you still have those that mental drive and those high expectations,
right.
Like you were playing and practicing 8 hours a day. And
interesting.
It, you know, took me a while to kind of realize, like, hey, I don't want to do this anymore. This is not who I am. I'm going to let go.
Right.
I love competing. Don't get me wrong. Like, I still compete, but it's on a totally different purpose now.
Right.
It's connecting.
Dude, Ellen is like the ultimate jock. Like the ultimate jock. Like the, like really clean diet,
meal
really
prep.
Strong. Yeah. Like such a grinder. It's so, I think it is really important to like heavily emphasize of just how many decisions that you make just through this lens. Like you really are just a golfer, but it's not like you fuckers out there playing recreationally. Like there's pain there.
Yes.
Like there's turmoil. Pain. There's it's like the ultimate journey. Like it's for good and bad.
For
like
sure.
it really is a hero's journey, in the sense that, you know, you really go, it's like Frodo going to Mordor. It's not like 100%. Skip around.
Yeah.
Like it is rough.
Yeah.
And you don't even, sometimes you don't want to be this way, but you can't help it because you were just so young or it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. I mean, I've even just combination of me getting older and then also just that changes my lens about how I look at golf. It's very fascinating because you bring up this idea of just like the overall stress and what it takes to do the job. And connected to what we were talking about with Charlie Woods and just like the pressure and the expectations and opinions that people just project. I've always found it very fascinating where like the average golfer in any, or the average spectator fan in any sport, football, basketball, whatever, has very strong opinions about the performance of the
Crazy.
People on the field.
Crazy.
Right. And look, I get it. The people at that level, like that is the price of playing at that level. Right. And that is, that's part of it. However, like, me, I would, my opinions of how people play on the PGA Tour are like, all right, he had a bad day, he had a good day, because when you really understand and break down how hard it is to play that good for that long,
yeah,
like you look at it so differently, and you can like just put yourself in that person's shoes for like 3 seconds. Mm-hmm. It's not easy.
I wonder, like, I don't know if I fully believe in IQ tests.
Mm-hmm.
But I do wonder, like, if there is some sort of, like, I wonder what the correlation a lot of times between high brain, like high IQs and professional athletes.
Right.
I think about this a lot. Like, there is, it's like there's some sort of intelligence that you, like, have to have. It's not necessarily emotional intelligence in the way that, like, therapy or other mental health resources can provide.
Sure.
But there is something so strange about it, and you just, I don't know.
It's a different brain for sure. I think
it is a different brain.
They tick differently.
It's a different brain.
Yeah. Because to be able to not just be able to highly concentrate and do something at a very high level, but then the ability to like completely zone out the noise and then still do that requires in any skill or any like, you know, walk of life requires a lot of skill.
Yeah, absolutely. And then even just on the opposite of the side of that, when you've been a player and you're trying to tune out that noise too,
yes.
right? Of, hey, like, Ellen, I'm not good enough. why didn't you stick it 5 feet when you were
so
50 yards and you missed the green because you chunked it because you haven't been practicing, right? So it's just that, and that for me, that actually took a lot of therapy.
It's exhausting.
Totally.
To do that, and it's exhausting.
Do y'all think about this as golfers? Like, sometimes I get real tripped up with like how we think that we can hit a target from like 250 yards away. Like, how fucking stupid is that?
Yeah, and pretty arrogant.
Pretty arrogant.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, I just missed something that's, I missed a 15-yard window from 250 yards out. And you're so angry at yourself. So angry.
It is fascinating. I mean, I've heard people in the past talk about golf. The reason why golf is so powerful is that there's some like weird primal shit in there. Like, we're in nature and like we're hitting targets and it's like, you know, some caveman shit. Which I could see.
Totally.
Planet of the Apes.
Yeah. It's Planet of the Apes. Would you be mad if you were like trying to throw a spear at some elk and you missed it? That is the weird. Like, I imagine when you were talking, like hitting
hunting.
Yes. Hitting a 9-iron compared to some guy like, ooh, throwing a spear. Hoorah. It's like, fuck, I missed the elk. But it's it's fascinating. You're
that is, well, it looks like we know what we have to do.
Right.
Buy a bunch of javelins.
Or we can go to Wegmans and just get the elk there.
We go to the Wegmans hot bar for
and
the elk.
Pretty damn good.
Do you have any elk chili?
Excuse me. Have you primitively hunted an elk recently? Do you guys have that at the hot bar?
Oh, we just made a fresh pot. Yeah, it's right here.
Delicious.
Guarantee that would be in my spiel of lunch that day.
That's elk. High protein, low fat. That's
high good. Protein, low fat.
There we go. Okay, we've reached the turn. Let's get a quick snack. We'll take a quick break. What do you guys want? I'm going to grab some of that peanut butter.
Shit.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm all peanut butter right now.
There's everything in here. Pretzels,
kashi bars. Cider vinegar. I could just chug a one.
Is Jared going to like kill me if I eat some of this stuff or no?
Nope.
Okay.
Oh, here.
All right. We'll be right back, guys. Look, we've all done it. It's a slow Tuesday and your boss is out of town. So you sneak up for a round. But you still want to flex a little bit that you're playing that course before your buddies do. The Fair Game app has you covered. You can set up your round, and when you tee off, all your buddies will know about it. They can even hop in the comments and talk smack while you're playing. Want to post a video of you hitting the purest shot of the round? You can do that too. All without your boss knowing. It'll be our little secret. Fair Game, the app for golfers. So, we are back from the snack break. One question I would love to know, because obviously you guys, you know, play professionally and you're teachers now. Did you guys have kind of like a genesis moment? Because I'm always curious to hear when people decided to do what they wanted to do. Like, what was each of your moments to say, I want to teach now?
Yeah. I'll go first. I mean, I was living in Naples, Florida full time. I love Naples.
Oh my God. It's because you're an old woman, dude.
I am. Like, the blinking lights start at 9 p.m. and I'm already asleep.
Great. That sounds fantastic.
But anyway, when I was rehabbing my wrist and not playing yet, I was teaching at this academy at Tiburon Golf Club for the beginning of my career and, you know, kind of dabbled with juniors a little bit. And it was like, yeah, like I like teaching and it's cool, but really wasn't like, oh, like didn't feel the fire, right? And then I remember my coworker at the time, she had to leave because she had another teaching opportunity up north. And I became the director of women's programming. And I was like, okay, like I'll see how women's programming is and kind of women's golf. And I remember my first clinic, you know, right in the middle of February, not knowing what I was doing, kind of had like a plan lined up, but just seeing all the female golfers, and most of them were beginners, but it was actually the LPGA Amateurs, which is a really good organization that's nationally well known for any female golfer, but had a clinic for them. And I was just like, man, this is the fire. Cool. I love teaching, love helping everyone, love being their cheerleader. You know, even if they get the ball barely up in the air, right? And just seeing their faces. And I think for me, that was the pivotal moment of, wow, like, okay, plan A is teaching now. What do I need to do next to keep developing?
Dope.
It is really satisfying when you teach specifically newbies, because they can just make so many big leaps and bounds. Because like ultimately that's the whole thing that keeps you going, is when the outcome, you know, when you hit a really great shot, you're like, oh shit, that's keeps me coming back. But it is really special when you teach newbies and they have those moments like the stride is bigger for that moment, you know? It's fucking crazy. And then there's also like a nice little kickback as their instructor where you're like, sweet, this is our communication style. This is what works right. for them. Like, I think that's the really cool part about teaching is that you get a lot of reassurance within yourself, to be honest. Like being an educator is really, really difficult. I'll get to my pivotal thing, but I'm going to go on a tangent here.
Tangent, go for it.
Small tangent. But like being a communicator, I mean, like ultimately, I think the majority of our job is communication. Like you really have to speak the same language for when you're teaching somebody.
Right.
And it's really nice when you can get that little reassurance of I'm giving this person what they need in this moment to get a better outcome. Like that, I think, is so fulfilling.
Right.
You know?
And it's finding, you know, I remember someone told me, said, you know, golf teachers are like chameleons. They have to adapt to whoever's in front of you and how to do it the most efficient way possible, right? Because you can have one day of 8 lessons and you were grinding it out, right? Because you might mesh well with one teaching style than the other, right? And then the next day you might have the 8 lessons and it's a breeze. It's so easy, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just that finding that sweet spot for whoever's in front of you where they can get it, they can learn. And I love just providing the experience for that hour, if it's an hour lesson. Like, how can I give that person the best experience possible, regardless of the result, regardless what happens? Just finding what their learning style is, connecting to them, I think is awesome, it's like so you good. Were saying.
My pivotal moment when I knew that teaching, I hate to say that I fell into it, but I really kind of did. Like, I always knew that golf was going to be my future. Mm-hmm. And, you know, prior to the age of like 27, I thought I was going to be playing. I exited golf for a much different reason. Like, mine was a bit more internal struggles. Like, I had lots of developing anxiety, really poor coping mechanisms. Like, I really did not have a healthy relationship with golf. We've talked about that before. But so I decided to leave, and I actually worked as a club fitter for a long time. And I loved it. Honestly, I really enjoyed fitting. But it really is part of the same ideology of like you're just helping somebody and you're communicating with them and, you know, listening to what they need and providing them with it's like a puzzle. Like it's like, I don't know, it's like scratches your brain in a really nice way if you're up for it. But I was working as a fitter and then COVID hit and I was able to start teaching at the course that I grew up playing. The head golf professional was like, if you want to, you can come. And it just like, kind of like what you were saying, like all the wheels, it was just like immediately enjoyed it. Some days it's really fucking hard.
Sure.
Like last week I taught almost 30 lessons in 3 days. And I was like, I understand that I'm popular.
It's burnt. It's a lot.
The bay life is real.
Terrible. The bay life is so real. Like you're rotting under the TrackMan lights and you're like, I reek. I haven't eaten. My brain is like sputtering along and somehow you get it done. And then there are like huge releases of endorphins and like fun. And it's crazy.
Because every lesson is unique and you can't apply the same.
You're making these decisions up on the spot. Like you're like, what drill am I going to do to help this person? Everybody is different, but sometimes the same drills can sort of apply to somebody or the same premises. It's intense.
Yeah, it seems intense. Speaking of intense, I saw that they released the top 50 teachers in America thing. What was that, Golf Digest? I had one thought about this because I thought it was interesting. From my very basic layman's understanding of, you know, what it takes to be a best teacher, a lot of the people on that list, and I don't know all the names, but a lot of people on that list are people that are known for teaching pros, which isn't a bad thing. But I'm curious if, just from your perspective, because both of you guys teach, one, is it weird to have a list that is primarily put together? Like, I don't know, let me tangent for a second. Like, for example, if I'm looking at something that's calling out the best chefs in America, or the best musicians in America, most likely that list would consist of, let's compare it to food. It wouldn't necessarily be the restaurants that have the most expensive menus.
No.
It would be, okay, well, this person masters this cuisine, this person masters this cuisine, this person comes from this background. Here's an interesting amalgamation of people that represent the best experiences within food within America. And those things might come at different price points. Yeah. And it's going to be a mix of like men and women, et cetera, et cetera. And like there's some old grandma in there, whatever, which
is
cool.
You mean to tell me Jackson Heights doesn't have the best food ever?
That's
and
what I'm
no
saying.
Restaurant will ever make that list.
Right.
I think that's so indicative of like golf instructors
what
as
do
well.
You, what's your take on that list and how it comes together? Because I don't know how it works, the ins and outs of it.
Yeah. Do you want me to?
You
I
take
have thoughts.
This.
I have thoughts.
Go in.
So a lot of those, so things that are purely subjective, like don't
sure.
always work. Like, mm-hmm. so they're voted by their peers or chosen by their peers. And there's something really inherently flawed with that. Cause like, I respect the work of all of my peers. Well, most of my peers are shade.
Roasted.
No, I respect the work of all of my peers. I can't speak on the work of somebody who charges $1,000 an hour because that is completely inaccessible to me. Like that is outside of my like world. That is in a different galaxy than me.
Totally.
So, and like, there's just so many questions of like, how are we choosing? What is the like criteria here? And I, you know, all those lists always end up being the same people. Or 90% of those people are the same people.
Yeah.
They teach a very specific type of athlete. And it's dudes. Like, it's always going to be dudes. Like,
is it all dudes?
Not the top 50. I think, if I remember correctly, I think there's three or four women. Like, Trillium Rose is on that list.
Okay.
I know that. I think there's like three or four of the top 50. And like, honestly, that is just a numbers. That is like, it's a numbers game at that point where it's like, you mean to tell me there are only three that cracked the top 50 in the country?
Right.
I will say too, these are all PGA accredited professionals, which one of us is not. And one of us is, but well, no, you have your,
I'm just LPGA.
You're LPGA, which is still crazy. Like still amazing. But like, so that means that Ellen can't be voted into that criteria, even though our education, I don't know. Like, I think it's just a very inherently flawed system and it always ends up
right.
Like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, it always misrepresents golfers at large.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And to piggyback off that, like, number one, right? I would love to see a lot more females on that list, right? I mean, it's still a male dominant industry.
Sure.
Right. And we're breaking barriers and stuff. And we're seeing that on the teaching side, right? A lot of women who have these executive roles are coming to us and be like, hey, listen, I want to learn how to golf because everyone else in my building is playing and I'm not, right? So I think we as instructors, we like Liz and I, we want to see more of that diversity, right? Especially women, because like that's life now.
Yeah, especially when
especially golf, right?
Totally, and like, especially when it's like you're asking people to talk about essentially leaders within their community. Like, the best of something are inherently have to, people are looking them inherently for leadership, especially from an educator perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's just not. Like, there's so many women in golf now. And you mean to tell me not one of them is in the fucking top 20?
Right. It's actually funny because, like, when I think about just, like, teaching as a whole, and my wife is a principal now, and she used to be a teacher. But, like, it's almost in a weird way if there was a list of here are the best 50 teachers in America, and there were no dudes on that list, people would be in there out. They'd be like, there's no men on this list.
I know the representation of men, you know, it's something
fascinating.
I'm waiting for men to have their come up. You know what I mean? I'm waiting. The year of the man, 2024.
We've been waiting so long.
I actually drafted on my, so I did this like 10 times. So there were, I can't remember exactly how many, there were less than five women in the top 50, but there are zero in the top 20 of golf instructors, according to this Golf Digest list. I don't know how many times I drafted on my story and then deleted it and then back on my story of the year of the man. I was like, thank God men are women winning, you know, like it's, I don't know. I just,
it's fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it like in it for me, it goes back to what is the purpose of this list?
Yeah.
What is the, what do we want golfers, the average golfer that's consuming this media, what do we want them to get out of this? Because to your point of accessibility, is there value in dangling something and something in front of anyone in any aspect of culture that you can't see or touch? Maybe, maybe not. Like, if you're talking about food, or I don't know, one of the things that comes to mind for me is when they always release the best courses in America list. Mm-hmm. And I think number one is always Pine Valley. And like,
we literally can't play there until like 3 p.m. on a Sunday.
Right. But I, from what I've heard, you can't even see the course.
Yeah.
You can't go experience it. And from my perspective, the perspective of an average everyday golfer, I kind of don't care that that's number one on the list because I can never go get it. Like, it's not, it's never going to be within my grasp.
Yeah. And does that make something the best? Because right. it's expensive and exclusive. Like, a lot of those instructors on that list are $1,000 per
expensive
hour.
And exclusive.
1 hour of time. That's half my rent.
Right.
I don't know. I just, I think it's really important to just, I don't want to, like.
I think they should tier it out. I think it should be, here are the best, I don't want to call it everyday teachers. But
yeah,
like,
at this discipline or something.
Professional teachers that teach like pros. And maybe that's because you guys are all like, you know, golf professionals, but like. Yeah. It should be tiered out in some way because that would make more sense.
It's really strange.
Or at least provide more value, I think.
Yeah, and I think by seeing that tier, the average golfer would be like, oh, wow, there are many different types of instructors out there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, let me take a lesson with the guy who has a tour player. Let me take a lesson with my local pro.
Right.
Let me take a golf lesson at 5-Iron Golf. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Because
it's convenient.
Yeah, it's convenient and it works. It is totally. Fascinating. Like, so I don't know if you know this, but like, I see Liz. I don't see her enough.
You did mention that.
And I don't I don't practice enough. So that's not the teacher's fault. That's my fault. Mm-hmm. But we're making strides. But it's fascinating where years ago, I feel like I only took lessons with guys. And I met Liz and I was like, oh, Liz, she's fucking cool. And like, we like think the same way. And I think I've taken lessons over the years and in different ways, I've heard the same thing communicated, but sometimes like someone just says it the right way and it clicks for you.
Absolutely.
And that has a lot of value. And totally. I remember, and I'm not going to call out my homie, but one of my friends was like, I was like, yeah, I'm seeing this chick Liz. She's cool. And he was like, you've seen a girl.
She's a bitch.
You've seen a girl for lessons? And I was like, yeah, she's a good teacher. And I think it's fascinating where like, there are many things in the overall perception of golf and teaching and who can teach and who can and who can't that just have to change. Cause at the end of the day, it doesn't really make sense.
Listen.
Yeah. I mean,
it's weird.
I've been opened up my husband, David, he's in the golf industry as well.
And yeah. Does he teach?
He's a club fitter and club fit builder. And
he's right outside.
He's
outside.
And it's just, he's what, like we chat and stuff and he's like, yeah, like I'm unaffiliated. And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, well, I didn't go through the PGA process. Mm-hmm. You know, I've learned from the ground up being sales rep, sales manager. And I've worked my way up because I loved fitting and I love the side of it. And he has that entrepreneurship mindset, but also that engineering architectural kind of vibe. And he's very smart. And he kind of like helped me kind of see in a different lens that you can learn something totally different than the way that the mainstream has portrayed, right?
Totally.
You know, I'm an LPGA Class A member and I'm proud to be a part of the LPGA, but there's also different avenues to learn this game. And I think that's the beauty of golf, right? You have that diversity kind of feel where you have many backgrounds who are playing this game and enjoying this game, but you also have a lot of different backgrounds of teachers that, to your point, Andrew, I'm so glad that you found a teacher that you vibe with and you have a really good relationship with and you trust.
It's me.
And Liz Reed.
Everyone.
And it's me. Think.
My favorite side note, my favorite comment that Liz told me after I saw her for a couple times, and she was like, you just need to go to the range and grind it out.
I hate when people come to me and they're like, I'm a mess. I'm like, bro, you just need time.
Just go grind. Like, cause I've had teachers, by the way, and again, not to shade on anybody, but I've taken lessons in the past. And sometimes I leave the lesson And I can understand how this happens in the industry. And you guys probably see this too with different teachers, where I feel like people teach you with the intention of, like,
changing.
I'm trying to think how I can either change. I'm trying to think how I can say this, like, articulate this clearly. But, like, sometimes people come in and get a lesson and they're like, I'm playing in an event on Saturday. Fix me. Right. And I'm sure you guys see this all the time. And the teacher probably goes into this mindset of, you're not going to practice. I'm just going to give you some very basic tips to get you through the next 7 days. And sometimes that's what it needs to be. Yeah. But I've taken lessons and I'm like, look, like, tell me the drills, like, give me some sense of, like, routine. I'm willing to kind of, like, see you on an ongoing basis because I know this is not going to change overnight. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes it's interesting where, like, the quick fix that, like, and it's probably a combination of the person coming in is giving off that vibe and the teacher knows, no matter what I say to you, you're not going to listen. Let me just give you. It's interesting.
Yeah.
It's funny because, like, Liz and I, our body language just, like, elevated. But
the hairs on my neck stood up.
It's one of my pet peeves in golf where, as us golf instructors and teachers and coaches, we mainly see our students when there's something wrong with them.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And we never see them when things are going well.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's that long-term approach, not that one off lesson, right? Or the 30 minutes before your tee time. Hey, Ellen, I need a driver fix.
That's my favorite.
Man. But anyway,
you're like, it's fundamentally, it's preventative versus proactive. I mean,
right. Truly,
we can have a whole, like,
come
other
see me when
episode.
You're crazy. When you're hitting it well. So I understand, hey, this is X, Y, and Z that you're doing right now. That's going so well. Let's make that a point. And when you're going off the rails, we're going to go back to this.
Right. People think that getting better at golf is, like, this big, it's pretty straightforward. You just have to find somebody that can help you along the way, mm-hmm. and you need some time. That's really it. Like,
interesting.
I always tell people, like, their tendencies, they're not, like, random struck by God acts. Like, it's just, it's really a lot more tangible than we think. It's just, it comes down to time, structure, and having somebody that can guide you, you know?
Yeah.
It's like ayahuasca.
Like hallucinogens.
It's
cool.
Like the 7 stages of grief of ayahuasca, and you need a shaman.
That is very funny stuff. Okay, a couple more questions, and we'll wrap it up. So, I think you guys kind of answered this. Maybe we can just, like, really hit home on this.
Quickity quick.
But which one have you found more fulfilling, teaching or playing?
Fuck. I just melted. To me, it's too... I can't.
It's apples and oranges.
I can't. Yeah. The highs of playing are so addictive, and they keep you around for so long. But the stability of teaching is a lot... Well, it's way more stable for me, especially I'm a widow anxious. So
just a widow.
So playing really made that a lot worse for me.
Yeah.
So, and, like, you're broke, and then sometimes you're not broke, and then you're, you know, like, it's just a very, but, like, winning a golf tournament is the most insane feeling in the world. It's... Getting the big check. And being like, what's the routing number on this big check?
Right.
Ooh. Is crazy.
Yeah.
But wild. Teaching is just so much more stable for me. So I can't.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to back off, Liz, I mean, there's nothing better than winning, right?
Nothing.
And, but even just for looking back, you know, like, even just qualifying for a major event.
Mm-hmm.
I was lucky enough to play in the 2020 KPMG
Never heard of it.
Women's PGA Championship.
Oh, that one.
Ever heard of it?
Yeah.
Oh, and that one.
Just to be in that vibe too, and as a teacher and as a player, to see what the professionals at that level go through.
Yeah.
It's not glitz and glam.
Yeah.
At all, even at the LPGA level. And but even just golf as a whole, teaching and I get to help people, and that's through golf. There's just a different fulfillment when it's playing, and then you get a different fulfillment when you're teaching.
It's so healing, isn't it?
Right.
Like, yeah. It's so healing for your younger self. Like, that's such a big premise that a lot of people talk about right now. Like, it really is establishing healthier relationships than what you had as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, you can heal yourself while you're helping somebody else. Oh. It's different. Mm-hmm. It really is different.
Okay. Last question. When and where is your next round of golf? Fuck. Yours is in LA, of course.
Oh, man. I don't know, actually. I very dearly loved the times that I've been to Scotland. So I hope my next round is going to be in Scotland somewhere.
Sick.
Plus, like, golf there, you'll play the most insane golf course for like $15. So I don't know. I can tell you where I don't want it to be.
Where?
New York fucking city.
That is true.
I do not want to play golf in here.
It's going to be 45 on Sunday.
I don't. Care.
You're like, no.
I don't know.
I feel like you told me this months ago. You were like, I'm not going out there.
60 degrees.
Yeah, you were like, if it's not 60 or higher, I'm not.
To be fair, Andrew, like, Liz and I have played in some nasty weather.
That's disgusting. Fair. You put in your time. So you're like,
too good for that.
I'm done with
yeah.
that. Fair
it's
enough.
Terrible.
Fair enough. But you're going to go to Scotland. I mean, it's chilly over there.
Yeah, but I'm in Scotland.
That's true.
It's but I'm different. Not here.
It's different.
It's different.
What do you mean? What is the problem?
It's the motherland.
That is true. Fair enough. Okay, Scotland. Like, what course in Scotland?
Well, I've been, so I'm such a bitch. Like, I've gotten to play some really great golf courses, like Royal Thorneck and St. Andrews, King's Barnes. Blah.
Sick.
I don't know. Like, I would really like to just immerse myself in golf culture in the UK in general, because I think it's just so much different, and it's a little bit more like organic. It's fucking cheaper.
Yes.
It's a lot more accessible for people. It's not as like, there's no element of like peacocking like there is in the US. It's not about like the bag tags right. on your bag.
It's just golf.
It's just golf.
Yeah,
and then there's some weird ass guy that's behind the fuck. I mean, I guess you get that here in the US.
What?
The crazy starter.
Yeah,
or like
they're all kooky.
The guy that you're just like, whoa.
Right.
But I would really like to get to know golf in the UK a lot more. Plus, that's like where golf is.
Liz's hop in the pond. Okay.
Hop in the pond.
I'll fucking do it so fast.
Great. Ellen, where are you tuning up now?
Man, nothing right now. I mean, multiple courses here at Five Iron Golf.
Yeah.
All over the world. So I'm just gonna stay put and just play all over.
You just got back from
I just got back from Arizona.
Oh, sorry.
I played an event there with my friend Sam, and we played a team event, which was super, super great.
Dope.
Ate all the best Mexican food in Tucson, Arizona.
Jesus. Shout out to Tucson.
So, I mean, the golf is great in Arizona, but the food is even better, which is great.
Lovely.
Miss my Wegmans, though, but...
I know. It's almost lunchtime.
Yeah, it is almost lunchtime.
You're about to be sponsored, so you don't eat anywhere else but...
That's fine. That's fine.
Wegmans.
But I'm very excited for my honeymoon coming in June. Dave and I are going to Big Cedar Lodge.
Sick.
God.
That'll be
so
fun.
Yeah, the most American thing you can do probably.
They have that crazy...
The golf looks sick.
Yeah, they have crazy... Is it a Jack Nicklaus course?
No, it's Tiger Woods.
Tiger.
Oh, well, what the fuck is a difference?
And we're back to Mr. Woods.
God.
Full circle.
That's so funny.
It does look fun though. That course looks very fun.
Yeah, of course.
Where do you fly into for that?
We're going to fly into Springfield. And then take like the, I think it's like less than 2 hour drive down to the Ozarks.
Fun.
So
nice. Yeah.
I was going to say, I was like, isn't that in the Ozarks? But then I didn't want to be a dum dum.
Sorry, I got to watch that too. So two shows.
Ozarks
watch.
Is also great.
Ozarks is amazing. It is so good.
It's
so the UK office and the Ozarks.
Yeah.
Yes.
10 out of 10. All right, guys. Thanks for the time.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.